All right, first question. We're going to kind of set how I think I want to do this. We've got this lesson on nature of man, and the next lesson on hell and punishment. Here's my question, and don't be embarrassed to answer truthfully. How many were not able to get done the lesson on nature of man? Everybody ever get that one done?
I got it, but sometimes I don't know if sometimes the words weren't in there that I thought on the versions, okay. Or an attempt was made. But.
All right. How about, how far did y'all get on, or I'm going to ask some questions on hell and eternal punishment. Did everybody get the majority of that done? Because I know one person that didn't get it.
I
didn't. Okay, you didn't. Anybody? All right, so we'll have to modify a little on that.
It's okay if you want to go through it. I've done some of it.
Well, other people
don't
worry
about it.
So I'll handle that when we get to it. What I want to do, because we are time constrained, since you've gone through this lesson in particular, is I'm going to walk through these words and just I'm going to tell you what I have as my understanding of what they say. So by exception, if you came to a different understanding, feel free to stop me and let's look at the verse, okay? Rather than go through this every single verse and ask you what you found, because that just adds time. What I've done here, there are, as we talked about with the Jehovah's Witnesses, they look at the word soul as being man is a soul, not man has a soul. And they, as I listed in one of these, they'll look at a reading on the term soul as it's used in the Bible, and when it's talking about the way they would put it, animals and men, that's the only way it's ever used, just as a being, not having a soul, not something to do with the inner man. And that's a problem you run into with people, that sometimes they'll pick a word and a definition, and that's one that will continue throughout. So what this class is intended, or this lesson is intended to do, is deal with these various words that get translated, soul and our spirit, having to do with the spirit of man, and what I think the Bible teaches, at least in some instances, is dealing with the inner man. And you're going to see, like always with words, they get translated variously, and you, when it's all said and done, you have to look at the context to decide what is the meaning of this word. And in the Bible, for these words that are translated this, I gave you four of them. In the Old Testament, you've got nephesh, and then there's another one called, I probably won't pronounce this one very, very well, Ruach is the other one. And in the New Testament, you have the word, the Greek word pushe, or I guess really suke, and the other one, of course, is pneuma. We're probably more familiar with pneuma than anything. The words, and I've given you some definitions, and there are two sources I use for these, for the Old Testament, Brown Driver and Briggs, and then for the New Testament words, Thayer, and to provide you with various definitions. And you see, in the case of nephesh, it can be translated variously. It shows like 750 times, or more than 750 times, as worse in the Old Testament. And it's going to be translated as soul or life, person, mind, heart, creature, etc. And it deals with, can deal with that which breathes, the breathing substance of our being, soul, the inner man, inner being of man. It can be a living being. It can deal with the man himself, as his self or his person or his individual. It can be the seat of the appetite, seat of emotions and passions. So these are the kinds of definitions that will come out of a lexicon. So let's just look at what these verses say, starting with the Bible teaches B, Nephesh number 2, A. And I'll just say A, B, C, D. A, if you, I say, you got a section, let me know. Amalek, there. B, the soul of every living thing. So it's dealing with just a living thing. And then it says, if you go on and read that, it says, and the breath. And the breath there, the breath of all mankind, the breath there is this word, Ruach, that we'll see later. Numbers 31, having to do with a creature or a person. Leviticus 21, number 6, sorry, D, has to do to the, it may refer to the body, but in every place it is translated that way, you're going to find, I think you're going to find, it's translated that way dealing with a dead body. Okay? Job is E, the soul within, distinguished, in that case, distinguished from the body. F, the soul thirst, the flesh longs, so again, it's distinguished from the body. And then and G, his breath, talking about the, however you say it, Leviathan. His breath kindled cold, so it's translated breath there. It has to do with, you know, what we commonly would call breath. And then H, I, and J all relate to, and it's translated soul in King James, all relate to the inner man. Okay? Anybody find any exceptions or want to question that?
I did them all wrong.
Sorry?
I said I did them all wrong.
Oh, the question wasn't clear if you did them all wrong.
No, I don't know why I thought to choose from one of the above. And I
oh,
that's kind of what I thought too.
Yeah, that's me too.
See, I told you the question wasn't right.
I mean, like emotion or passion or living being or person. Yeah.
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 I
put that to
time.
Yeah. Well, the point being, well, I want you to see, so let me backtrack on you. Maybe that's just a much shorter class. The point, what I want you to see is this word can be translated, even when it's translated as soul. If the context can mean a being, can actually mean a non-human being, or it deals with what's in a man, the inner part of a man, like the last three references I gave you. Genesis 42:21 is talking about the anguish of the soul. Numbers 21 talks about the soul lows. It's not talking about the outer, you know, it's not talking about a human being. Ezekiel 24, the soul pines. I mean, pities. So, and then I said some of these they actually distinguish between the two. Okay? All right, well, this is going to be interesting. Suke.
I did find it interesting, you know, as you go down those and everything, from the living being to the, you know, to the emotion, to the passions, to the inner feelings, you know, that kind of thing, and the breath. I thought it was very interesting, you know, that all these appear as you read the context. You can tell what it's talking about,
sure.
about this man, this soul.
Yeah, that's generally the case. And yeah, they're going to be, this isn't 753 of these. These are meant to just give you an example of why you don't latch on to soul, much like it's used in Psalm 78, is animal life. Remember, to JW, you're just a higher level of animal. Okay? Alright.
So have they gone through in their New World Translation and translated it consistently across the whole Psalm?
I wouldn't know. I didn't read the whole. I tried to not read that anymore than I had to. They're going to use soul a lot. Okay? They're just going to use that. That's not going to be uncommon for them.
Well, they're making correlation between us being basically a higher animal and us and our inability to understand the Bible. Is there any correlation there? Because we're really just an animal?
No.
Okay.
Not that I've seen.
Well, are you going to give in your lesson, I can't remember, I don't remember saying it, do you cover Genesis 1:30 and 2:7?
Make your point now.
Well, I can understand why the JWs believe what they believe. If I just go to Genesis and I can kind of see the soul, right? So in 130, talking about animal life and bird life, and the American Standard says, which has life, and it literally means which is a living soul.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you go down to 2:7, the same thing says, a man became a living soul. So if I just take those two verses, and I see soul in both of them, well, life's got soul, God breathed, it became a living soul. I can see that, well, we're just like animals. God gave them a soul, gave us a soul. We're talking about life.
You're right.
So if I use those two verses, I can understand where they're coming from. But of course, many of us throughout the rest of the Bible.
That is the problem. You know, like I say, it's not, you know, you can pick out a verse or two to make that connection. I never deny, I've been here. You don't deny that the word soul, if the word is translated soul, can mean just simply life. And that's what it does mean.
And that word is used both for animals and also for man, so it's, well, we're just like animals.
Yeah. But where it's not used that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Breath. The suke. Let's see how this one works. It can mean breath, or it can mean, and it's translated that way, or it can mean the soul, see the feelings, desires, affection, etc. Romans 13:1. There's a case in point. Let every soul be subject. What's it mean? Every person. Okay. Romans 11:3. Seek my life. Again, seek my soul, seek my life. And here I translated life. In C, you got three things I gave you: Hebrews 4:12, Matthew 6:25, Matthew 10:28. In this case, it's differentiating between the two, right? Dividing asunder the soul and spirit. Soul different than spirit. By that, if you take that to literally mean what's being said, I know some people that gives. There's I've read commentaries about the difficulty around those two, but. What was I going to say? It's lost my thought.
So three eyes.
What I was going to say, I think there is a distinction. It's a very. It is a not well differentiated to us. I mean, it's hard for us to understand the difference between the two, but there is a difference apparently. Yes. What you going to say?
So. You're saying the Hebrews 4, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, Hebrews 4:2, dividing asunder soul and spirit.
Okay, is that mind and will, or what?
No, it's soul and spirit.
Okay, oh, I know soul is spirit, okay.
It has to do with two aspects of the inner part of man.
Okay.
Where Matthew 6:25, life is more than food and the body more than raiment, soul, right. You know, it's pointing out that there's a difference between the two. Matthew 28, do not fear those who kill the body, but the soul. Acts 2:27, the soul talking about of death, in this case talking about Christ, soul not left in Hades, his flesh saw no corruption. And you might argue that that's one and the same, one explains the other. But there's ample examples where that's not the case. And certainly, Matthew 10:28, that's the case where it's differentiated. And so, even in the case of this word, there's a differentiation. Sometimes it's used to mean breath. Sometimes it's used to mean some inner aspect of mankind. There's a third word that we've mentioned, which generally can mean a number of things. Breath, wind, spirit, and I think I parenthetically said there's different aspects even of the spirit. In the way it's used, it may be translated as spirit, but it is in recognition of the context means different things depending. And of course, spirit of God. Again, this one's 378 times. I don't think I told you on the other one on suke. It's 105 times that it shows up in the Bible. So these words are very frequently showing up. And spirit, this particular word for spirit, the majority of the time it shows up spirit. It shows up when? 92 times. So it shows up as other things. So if you look at number 2, starting with A, Isaiah, moved by the wind. There's talking about literal wind. Ezekiel 37:8, there was no breath in them. That is the life, if you like, the life principle. They weren't breathing. C, the breath is in his nostrils. Isaiah 26, my soul, in there, that's that word nephesh, with my soul have I desired, yea, with my spirit. So in this case, they're kind of used interchangeably, and soul and spirit. And just, you know, this is a repeat parallelism. In Ecclesiastes, dust to earth, spirit to God, and there it's differentiated, see, from man, from body, and the inner man. And then F, G, H, I, and J all refer to the inner man. There is a spirit in man, spirit within me constraineth me, spirit with me, spirit formed within man, spirit grieved and missed the body. So these are all, just to point out in context, these are all talking about inner spirit. And then pneuma, as I mentioned, is one we're probably more familiar with. It occurs almost 400 times. And many of the times it shows up as spirit. The Holy Spirit, this is the word that will show up in the Holy Spirit, as I mentioned. Our spirit of God, various times. Evil spirit will show up in that case. So you look at these verses I gave you, and right off the bat, John 3:8, wind bloweth where it will. So here's just plain old breath. Likewise in B, the breath of his nostrils. John 1:32, spirit descending. Of course, that's not a breath, that's not the wind, that's the Holy Spirit in that case. Luke 4:23, a spirit of an unclean devil. Now there, it can mean literally, I mean, there, that you, I just go back and look. I can try and remember. I need to look. Let me try to do this off the top of my head. Luke 4:33. Okay, this is a man possessed by a spirit of an unclean demon. So this was a first century, or at least mainly first century phenomenon that we're familiar with, where these people were had demons in them. So they here refer to a spirit of an unclean devil or a demon. 1:14, are they not ministering spirits? There that talks about angels. In that context. And then 2 Timothy, a spirit of fear. So really having to do with the character, moral qualities of your life, the attitude of a person. And then H-I-J-K-L. All involved with some kind of thing differentiated from the body. In the case of Luke, it's seen a spirit as in a ghost. In 24, it's a spirit that doesn't have flesh and bones. Jesus, of course, when he died, said, "Receive my spirit." Hebrews 2:23, talking about the spirits of just men that are on Mount Zion, or heavenly Zion. And then James 2:26, a body without spirit is dead. So we're familiar with that. All these have to do with something about the inner man differentiated from a being, a body. The next one, Job 7:11, if you read that in Isaiah 26, they're used, the word soul and spirit are used interchangeably. Now in this case, I'm going to read it for you. In King James Version, says that this is Job 7:11. Therefore, I will not refrain my mouth; I will speak with the anguish of my spirit. That's our word, how you pronounce it. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. And that's nephesh. You go to Isaiah, and you get with my soul. nephesh. I have I desire thee in the night, yea, with my spirit, talking about the R-U-A-C-H. So here, they're just, you know, they're referring to the same thing, they're just using interchangeably. If you go into 1 Thessalonians, Hebrews 4:12, there, they use differentially. In the very Thessalonians, and the very God of peace sanctify you wholly, and I pray God your whole spirit and soul and body be preserved. So here's a difference being delineated. And then in Hebrews 4:12, we already read 4:12, talking about the word sharper than a two-edged sword. So there are a variety of meanings applied to these words. That's the point. It's not a single meaning. And the one we're most, probably a number of them that we're more familiar with is the idea that the soul, although it can be used for our body or just a man, a being, or an animal, but generally speaking, when we're talk about it, because where we focus, we end up dealing in matters that have to do with the soul of man, that is, that inner portion of man. And I guess the only thing I can help you with, and it's even a help, when you try to differentiate the spirit and the soul, and I don't know this is 100% right either, to tell you the truth, and that is that the spirit is sort of the higher side of man's nature. The part that's in common with God and is capable of conceiving God in that aspect. And, I can't speak to it very well because in my own mind it's just hard to differentiate. If somebody has a clear differentiation of the difference between soul and spirit, and sure, after class. Because there's so often those two terms are used synonymously. Okay. Everybody confused enough now?
Say that again now.
No, that's not important. I say it's not important for this class, trying to differentiate between soul and spirit.
Okay.
It's not really not the issue at hand. Okay? How did God create man in the beginning?
It's like his own image.
And we talk about the nature of that, and the idea that God created man as a higher level of animal, where the animal kingdom, what differentiates us is simply our dominion over other animals, is not something you're going to find in the Bible. Okay, death and mortality. Well, if a soul is only basically you are a soul, just a human being, then it's not too hard from that. When you die, that just means when your soul dies, you die. When you die, your soul dies. And so their view is man's mortal, his spirit and soul and body are all mortal. And so you're once dead, you're dead, period. And I say that sort of, and we'll talk about that later. The soul, because you cease to exist after death, therefore, the soul ceases to exist after death. Is their view. And you see in some of the other comments that one is that this is a doctrine of the immortality, is a doctrine of the devil. Getting caught up with that. Look at number 4, 1A4, starts off in the first man, Adam. Down in the first, second sentence of that, it says, "For dust you are, and to dust you will return." And they ask the question, what was Adam before Jehovah created him from the dust? Well, he was nowhere. He simply did not exist. Therefore, say they, when he dies, he will no longer exist. Let me ask you a question, and you go back to Genesis. This may be stretching the point. The first time I did it. Was Adam a human being when God made him from the dust? I mean, this reading here says, "For dust you are, and to dust you will return." Where was Adam before God was created him from dust? And so they kind of key in on this idea of dust. Right? Was Adam a man, a living man, before when God formed him out of dust?
When he breathed into his nostrils, breath of life.
There's something else that happened. It isn't simply that man is created and he is dust, out of dust. Which where they kind of get this. Yes, the body, that's true. God created the body. But God, verse 2, chapter 2, verse 7, we read this earlier, "Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being." And did God breathe into man simply the breath of life, air? Is that what he did? He said, "There you go, you're up and moving." And that is what they would, I think it's what JWs would accept to be the case. Okay. So anyway, just a little side trip on that one. So their definition of death is termination of existence. And it's annihilation. You're gone. Period. There's nothing other than, you know, depending on whether you're cremated or you're buried, you go back to dust of some sort. So it's just utter and complete annihilation. Alright? Death, as taught by the Bible, again, it's one of those words that has many meanings. And I try to lay that out for you. If you look at James, this first one, James 2:26, Ecclesiastes, Genesis, what does it mean there when the word death is used?
Physical death.
Body is separated from something. What's it separated from?
Spirit.
Separated from the spirit. It's just physical death, as we think of it. In the next two verses, Ephesians and Romans, what's it mean there?
Spiritual death, separated from God.
Well, read, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sin." Even you were dead in your transgression. And he made us alive. So, in that position, we were separated from God, weren't we? In our sin. Down in Romans, it says, "We who died to sin still live in." Now, what kind of separation is that? It's not separation from God, is it? We died separated from sin. Okay? So again, even in this version, you see this use of separated or death means something even apart from what we normally think of, other than physical life or loss of relationship with God. One of the other of those. Number 6, John 5:24.
In Romans, there before we go on. There in verse 9 and 10, that's talking about...
Romans 6?
Yeah, Romans 6, that's talking about physical, you know, and then he comes back to the spiritual. Am I missing it?
No, that has to do with... If we have died with Christ, we should believe we should also live with Him. Different kind of death there.
Right.
If He raised from the dead, that has to do with the fact that He was physically dead.
Mm-hmm.
And never to die again.
Mm-hmm.
And death, that's what you meant.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 9. Yeah.
So our point is just a few verses meaning different meanings.
There's meanings.
Right. Yeah. Both of them. Yeah, okay.
John 5:24.
Spiritual death?
Spiritual death, in this case, is spiritual death versus, I didn't ask you about this, but spiritual death versus spiritual life. So there's contrast made. And then John 11:25.
It's physical body from the soul. And then 26 is spiritual death.
11:25. I didn't mean 26, yeah. No. 11:25. There are a lot of verses. I'm going to give you this one. And here's a case of spiritual life contrasted, even if what? Physical death. See? So you got both the spiritual and like the other spiritual and physical in them. Matthew 8:22. Now here's two deads. This is beautiful. There's two deads, and they mean two entirely different things, don't they?
Spiritual dead.
Allow the dead to bury their own dead.
Yeah. Spiritually dead, bury the physically dead.
Right. Right. Yeah. And then the last one, wages of sin, death. If you eat from the tree, you'll die. What's in view there?
Spiritual death for eternity.
For eternity. Okay. So death, there's death like a lot of things, but we know this word death doesn't mean annihilation. You don't find it means annihilation anywhere, by the way. That's a figment of somebody's imagination. Except in the case of a non-human being, I suppose, an animal. But not in the case of man. Okay, it took us more than 20 minutes to get through that. And since nobody's got all of this one done, except Rocky, I think, we can go through this one real fast. I don't want to try to go through it real fast. I do want to try to get well into it. We're going to try to finish up the said in this class. That the, in a way, the idea of hell and eternal punishment, all these things kind of follow one another. I mean, there really is no point of hell if there is no afterlife. And in fact, if you go back to Miller, to the Millerites, Miller and Russell, they were of the view that they just could not believe that there was such a thing as hell. It was an eternal punishment. So they started from a premise that was in error, and so a lot of their doctrine will reinforce that premise. Okay? If you drop down to just the first thing, I said a couple of quotes to demonstrate. First thing, first paragraph there, this comment that Rutherford made, eternal torture is void of the principle of love, God is love. If he tortured his creatures eternally, would be a fiend and not a god of love. That is not an uncommon view today, by the way. And people just can't understand how God could be a loving God and do this. And so they have difficulty with it. And what they're, in part what they're doing is they are putting themselves in the position of God when they conclude that, when they say that. If you look down the second paragraph, scripturally, death is a state of non-existence. The dead have no awareness, no feelings, no thoughts. So that's their view of death and hell. They set this up. How could there be a hell? And their quotes here, the other quotes, Gehenna, condition of destruction, down Revelation 20:13, that paragraph, presently existing in any form, millions of dead ones who are in Jehovah's God's memory will be resurrected or brought back to life and restored earthly paradise. And we'll speak to that a little bit more probably in the next lesson. And of course, God's responsible for this. Again, like we can look at with soul, there are a series of words that are variously translated in the Bible as hell. Hades, Sheol, Tartarus, and Gehenna. The last two are Greek. First two, right? I think that's right. Hades and Sheol being I think that's right. Being Hebrew.
Hades
is Greek. Hades is Greek. And Gehenna is a word that has its takeoff of a valley that I think most of us are familiar with, where they threw their garbage, in effect. So you see, Hades, New Testament, right there, Don. Hades, New Testament equivalent of Sheol. And Tartarus shows up one time, and it's really the Greek equivalent of the concept of this Gehenna, ancient Greek's equivalent concept. So you have these words translated a variety of ways. Hades basically means unseen. Sheol basically means underworld. And we've already, Tartarus, we spent a lot of time on that just for lack of time. And it's used one time, and that's probably a study in its own right, just to talk about that context. Gehenna is its name of this valley that exists out by Jerusalem. And so it would come to mean by association is the hell that is associated with punishment. And all you had to do is look at the valley of Hinnom, where this word comes off of, and look at the nature of what was going on in that valley. And to a Jew in the first century, he would have no trouble conceiving of how bad this kind of eternal existence must be. And so it came to be used that way as a connector. So let's go. This one will be a little bit tougher, probably, because all we haven't done it. But B, letting context define the usage. What does Sheol, Hades mean in the following? And a question to ask, and if you don't have all these now, do them when you get home for the next class, and as well as the last lesson we had today. Just so you see this, gentlemen, the question was, do any of these imply non-existence, unconsciousness, or annihilation? They say things, but do they imply any of those as you read through them? You have Jonah 2:2, and in Jonah 2:2 is a realm other than living on earth. And the question, let's look at Jonah 2:2. It's a little different. See, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the stomach of the fish, and he said, I call out in my distress to the Lord, and he answered me, I cried in the depth of Sheol, you heard my voice. And so it's something different than living on earth. In this case, it's in the belly of a fish. And, is it the idea of the underworld, the unseen? It's certainly separated from being on earth. Is it the idea that he thought, he was saying, I was dead, I was the same as dead, could be, just not sure. 2 Samuel, there is King James Version, is translated hell, and it means death. Psalms 49, there is translated grave, means death, or the grave is a symbolic of death. Proverbs 23, hell, having to do with future punishment. Discipline won't deliver from death or the grave. And in Isaiah 14, translated grave, hell, and it's really a state of death or decay. There's a contrast made there, if you will read that. You look in Job, grave and pit, so that has to do with the grave or the tomb. Psalms 139 and Job 11, Amos 9, that it has to do with, it really contrasts me with great depth versus great height. And so there's even a different use of the word, translation of the word. Luke 16:23, familiar with that, is a place of rational, conscious torment. There being Lazarus and the rich man. And then 1 Corinthians 15:53, it's used as, the word is translated King James Version as grave. And there's some difference in the text, but basically it has to do with the idea of death. So, you know, there's no, again, there's no universal definition. It's got a variety of them. You know, great height versus great depth, grave, that, those kinds of concepts, as well as a place of torment. So you've got the same situation with here as you have in, I think, in the case, well, it's a little different situation than you have in the case of the soul. You know, to them, they will take death to mean it's annihilation. And I'm not sure when they read words like this, other than the fact that they view when a man dies, even though he goes to the grave, and therefore using those words to mean grave would not bother them, they were already convinced that he is non-existent. He's dead, he said. Has nothing that follows on. What kind of people go to Sheol or Hades? For those who looked at Genesis, Psalms, Numbers, Psalms, or I got past everybody's study.
Good and the wicked.
Good and the wicked. Mm-hmm. Jacob in the first one, Jesus in the second one, Korah and his friends in the third one, and Psalms 9 says wicked. So you can't arbitrarily say Hades or Sheol are where the wicked go. It's not true. You and I will go to Sheol or Hades in the sense of going to the grave. It is quarter till. Let's see if we get through Gehenna. Gehenna, Matthew 22, it's looked at as projected as the worst possible, I'll call it the worst possible punishment. They call it court, Supreme Court, fiery hell. In Matthew 5:29, worse than gouging out your eye, or cutting off your right hand. Okay, we didn't get through that. So we will pick up with D. We will try to do the same thing we've done not very effectively in this place. Please read all these. Get your notes down. Get your trail if the teacher wants. So we can get through the rest of this lesson in a rather efficient and fast way, so we can at least cover the and also the questions on the next lesson, so we can at least cover these various resurrections. I don't think we'll have any time. If we have time, we'll talk about teaching a witness, but I doubt we'll have a lot of time on that. Thank you. Sorry that I'm so rushed. Elaine Ava.